Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. That's not to say that you may necessarily agree with things that are said, but if you can keep an open mind, you will see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, my special guest is Dr. Michael Lennox. He's a psychologist, astrologer, and dream expert, and he has been helping people have a deeper understanding of their unconscious mind for almost 20 years. In workshops, in the media, for private clientele, and on the internet via his popular website, which is www.michaellennox.com. He guides people through life's mysteries with a deep and profound wisdom delivered through a humorous and extemporaneous style that has become his trademark. A highly sought-after media expert, Dr. Lennox has been seen internationally on many television shows, beginning with the Sci-Fi Network's The Dream Team with Annabelle and Michael in January 2003. Since then, he has also been featured on numerous network and cable television venues, including NBC's Emmy Award-winning Starting Over, Soap Talk, The Wayne Brady Show, and many others. His radio appearances talking about the power of dreams number in the hundreds. Lennox obtained his master's and doctorate in psychology from the Chicago School, Astrology and Personality. His doctoral dissertation is published by Lambert Academic Publishing out of Germany. His second book, Dream Sight, A Dictionary and Guide for Interpreting Any Dreams, was published by Llewellyn Worldwide Press in 2011 and is now available in 5 languages. And his latest book, Llewellyn's Complete Dream Dictionary, just was released today. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. And Dr. Lennox leads workshops and retreats all over the U.S. and conducts worldwide private practice based in Southern California. So with that said, I'd like to introduce Dr. Michael Lennox. How are you tonight?
I'm great. I'm delighted to be here. It's a little odd to listen to that whole sort of litany of my background.
It's impressive.
Who knew? I'm delighted that, this was the life I didn't know I was creating while I was creating it. And then, suddenly here we are. And I'm, leading, no pun intended, the life of my dreams.
There you go. Well, I think that's a good starting point. I like the fact that you use the word created, the life that you created. How did this journey towards creating this particular life with a passion and dreams and unveiling the secrets of the unconscious mind start?
Well, it's interesting because it was almost as if there were two tracks of this experience, one that was internal and my personal experience of having a gift, of being gifted in an intuitive way that really I discovered as a kid, and then this idea of, as an adult, that I could create a magnificent life, which was a real struggle, and I bumped up against that. Eventually bringing it together, I would say, in my mid to late 30s. But as a child, I just was fascinated with dreams, as many children are. And it was as a teenager reading Freud's Interpretation of Dreams that I was happy to show up on my mother's shelf. She was getting an MSW, a Master's in Social Work, and I read it and was introduced to the very real idea that dreams could, in fact, reveal things about the psyche and the soul. And so out in social settings, I just got sort of ballsy about it, David. You know, kids would say at school, I had this crazy dream. And I just said, okay, well, why don't you tell me what you dreamed and I'll tell you what I think about it. Because I was just that sort of arrogant, thinking I had something to say. But what was uncanny was I did have something to say. There was some operative, intuitive gift that I had, which at the time I had no capacity to understand, but something did occur. I would listen to a dream and I would just speak what occurred to me, and inevitably people's eyes would widen and they'd say, wow, that makes so much sense. Now, jump to many, many years later as a young adult, having taken courses, read more books, and really steeped myself in this idea, I did eventually figure out what it was that I was doing, which is that dreams are simply a story that our souls are telling ourselves in the sleep time. And that story is told in a language, and the language is symbolic in nature. And the meaning is built into the universality that underlies all things. And therefore, the meaning of a particular object or person or occurrence in a dream is actually held within the thing itself. What does it do? What's its use? What's its essence? You know, the essential quality of an animal is its universal meaning. The thing that a cup does is it contains liquid that I need to take into myself for sustenance and nurturance. So the meaning of the cup is that capacity to hold something that I need and take it into my body with ease and grace. So if the dream is that the cup is broken, there's a broken capacity to take something into myself that I need. And what I discovered was, this was again many decades later, the gift that I have is not that I know these things. We all know these things. These are universal principles built into just what a thing is and does. My gift is that I can do it really, 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 really fast. And that's what I've been doing when I work with people. I just listen and I respond.
Well, that is an amazing gift. And, you know, one thing that a lot of people downplay is the fact that we all have our individual gifts and spiritual gifts, too. And in many cases, they're latent gifts that can be developed in different ways. And I've had guests on that have offered to help people with that. But that's another subject. It's always amazing to have somebody on that has innate intuitive gifts. And it certainly sounds like that has shaped your life journey in terms of what you have pursued as your particular interests. And so today is a big day for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. You and I, David, picked this date when you invited me to come on the show because it happens to be the release date of the second of the dream books. My first book was obviously the academic book, which, you know, I think we've sold two copies and one of them was my mother. So that book hasn't gotten too much play. But the first book that I wrote that was published in 2011 is called Dreamsight, and that's more of a teaching tool, and that's designed to introduce people to this idea of universal meaning being built into the thing itself. And while it does have terms in it, there's about 300 terms, they're very long terms, and they're designed to teach you to consider all aspects of what a symbol might mean based on universal principles so that you can do it to terms that aren't maybe listed in the dictionary. This, the book that's coming out today, is just a straight reference guide, the kind of book you put at the side of your bed and look up terms. There's probably about 1,200 different items that might appear in a dream and the universal meaning that I ascribe to them. And yeah, it is. It's a milestone day. I was delighted when Llewellyn approached me about doing this book. This was not something that came really from me, but from them wanting to publish a comprehensive dictionary of dreams that was part of their brand. And since I was their resident dream guy, I got asked if I would do it, and I absolutely said yes. If the world, you know, wants another dream book for me, I'll say yes to it, and which is indeed a testament to staying with the vision that I had, despite the fact that for what seemed like an endless period of time, the world was saying either no or, more accurately, not yet.
Hmm.
Because so I had another career, you know, before. Then I was committed to having a life where I was using my gifts to be of service, and having, you know, like, you know, they say, if you love what you do, it's never work.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I wanted that. I wanted that experience. I wanted the experience that was, I don't really feel like I'm ever going to work because I so love what I do. And I have that experience today. It took an enormous amount of time to cultivate that. It did not happen overnight. But yes, today is definitely a milestone moment in that journey, and I'm excited.
I bet you are, and you well deserve it. I just wanted to comment on what you were saying about having found your passion and doing something that is fun for a living. And I think that it's important to point out that we can all achieve that if we follow our passions and follow our bliss. There's so many people that are trapped into dead-end jobs that are not providing them with satisfaction. And, you know, look at the examples of people like Michael and listen to their experience and how they've come to discover their passions and pursue jobs that are quote-unquote dream jobs. And
And let me tell you something. There were sacrifices along the way. You know, I live in Los Angeles and wasn't able to drive a car for several years because I couldn't afford it. I did not want to go back into being an executive in the entertainment industry. I had this television show on the Sci-Fi Network where we shot 65 shows, and it was built up as a big thing, and I was going to become a big celebrity dream interpreter, and the show was canceled after 3 months, and suddenly I was bankrupt and jobless and very confused, and I was so committed to doing what I wanted to do, which was to teach and do workshops and lead retreats and the like, and every single attempt that I made towards that in the first couple of years after that show was canceled failed miserably. There were more cancellations of events than there were events that got off the ground. And I couldn't afford to replace my car. And I remember the day when I was grateful to have $5 in my pocket because that meant I'd be able to afford a cup of coffee with my breakfast at the All-American Burger around the corner from the guest house in which I was living. And I had no other money in my pocket and did not know where my next meal was coming from.
Wow.
So a lot of people want the new career because they want to be rescued from that dead-end job. But don't forget, it takes an enormous amount of willingness to dive off into the unknown and feel supported by something that's very much invisible.
Boy, it certainly does. I've had that experience myself, and it's a real leap of faith and involves commitment and overcoming fears along the way. Let's get into talking about dreams a bit.
Yes.
Are there certain prototypes for dreams that you could talk about?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that is so about dreams is that there's a prototype or a category of dreams that are recurring in nature. And there are two categories within that category. And one that is so common to everybody who's listening to the show, it would be a great idea to just talk about what's the purpose and value of these recurring dreams. And the ones that I'm talking about are the ones that you have your whole life. And everybody has a different version of this. For some people, it's being chased by an assailant. For some people, it's the tsunami that they get carried away by. With other people, it's the apocalyptic end of the world. With some people, it's falling. These are economical ways that each individual has of processing fear, stress, overwhelm. And something early in life causes a stressful moment to show up in the dreaming mind a particular way that this might unfold. So maybe the small child sees a scary movie, and at a moment of processing that scary movie, they have a dream of a kind of a monstrous sort of occurrence. And then now they're a teenager and they're stressed at school and they have an experience of that same monstrous dream. It's because the brain is really very plastic and simple. It just sort of says, oh, Johnny's frightened right now. We've got to help him process those fears and those overwhelms. Let's throw up that scary monster chasing him dream because that worked the last time. And then before you know it, when I meet Johnny, he's now a 37-year-old young man who says, oh, my God, my whole life I've had this recurring dream of this monster chasing me. And it's like, okay, yes, it'll happen every time your psyche needs to process what it's like to wake up and feel like life is chasing you down. Life is scary, David. It is not an easy place to navigate.
And no, it's not.
It may be counterintuitive to think that scary dreams are helpful, but in fact they are. They're like practice for the soul. They're practice for the humanity of the dreamer to have an experience of what it's like to dip into the scary parts of life and actually navigate that territory, to move through the fear, to experience the sort of creative expression of what it's like to be chased down by your own fearful consciousness. Wake up, which, by the way, is kind of like surviving it. You wake up and you survive the monster chasing you. It may not feel like it because you think back at the dream and think, oh, my God, the dream was awful and it wasn't that terrible. But the fact is, the monster didn't get you. You got away. And then you wake up a kind of in a prepared, let's just say, in a prepared state to face the difficulties of life again, having exorcised the demons of the fearful consciousness that the dream was helping you deal with. And everybody has a different version.
Waking up is the victory, then, removes somebody from being a victim.
Yes, exactly right. That's a perfect. I love that word victory because it can be a spiritual principle when you use it in that regard. That victory over fear, victory over doubt, victory over lack and limitation is actually an ascension moment of consciousness. And so, yes, waking up is a victorious moment. See, one of the things that I deal with, even as a psychologist or a spiritual coach, is that people have overwhelming thought patterns. And those overwhelming thought patterns like, oh, I'll never get this done, or oh, my vision will never happen, or oh, I don't have enough money to make this or that occur, we get very attached to them, and they become bigger than us. But the fact is, any thought that you're having is smaller than you because it's happening inside of you. So it's the same thing with the shark who's chasing you down in the dream. It feels completely overwhelming, but the fact is that your total higher self-consciousness is way bigger than that shark. That shark is just one little part of who you are in your beautiful magnificence. Now, in that dreaming moment when that shark is bearing down on you, it sort of feels like all that there is, and you feel overwhelmed by it, but you wake up, and you essentially come into a remembrance, not in your conscious mind, but in your unconscious mind, you come into a remembrance that your higher self is the bigger picture here. That shark is only one aspect of your humanity, and it's inside of you, and it cannot therefore eat you. It's not big enough.
Gotcha. What other kinds of dreams are there?
Well, there's also the what I would call the processing recurring dreams that are a little more complex and might recur over a period of time, and those need your attention a little bit more deeply. So not the standard fearful, anxious dreams that you've had all your life, but maybe suddenly you start dreaming of, I'm thinking of a woman I worked with once who had a recurring dream of driving across the country. Now, she had literally driven across the country. She left her marriage, divorced her husband, and decided to start a new life in California. She only drove across the country in a week or so, but she had the dream of driving across the country for a year or more.
Wow.
And by virtue of what was happening in each of the dreams of driving across the country. What was the state of the car? What was her feeling sensation while driving the car? We could examine what was happening in her journey of starting the new life. Similarly, I worked with a woman who, oh golly, it must have been 2.5 years that she had dreams of airports, because airports and airplanes represent transformation that happens. You get on an airplane in one city, and when you get off, you're someplace completely different. So the universal meaning behind any kind of plane dream is big change and transformation. So she could identify what was happening in any given moment in her life by virtue of, was the plane ride successful? Was it a crash? Was it, you know, was she late? What was happening in relation to her experience with the airports and the planes in her dream was reflecting the shifts and changes that she was going through in her life. And the dreams eventually stopped when she had processed enough of the sort of underbelly of what she was going through, a lot of which had to do with grief and the passing of her husband and caretaker-itis that happens when you have to caretake somebody who's ill, and that was a big part of her journey. I'll throw out one last example before, you know, if you have any other questions about this. A little shorter term, I worked with a woman only once, but she's in my book as an example, and she's evoked in almost every time I speak about dreams, because it was just so obvious what was happening. And as an illustration, she was dreaming of giving birth to newborn babies and murdering them in really awful, bloody, and violent ways. And she was terrified of this dream image. She was a young woman. She thought this was literal, that it might have something to do with some, you know, homicidal nature that she didn't know about. Was she really just going to be a terrible mother? Was she never going to have children? And when I introduced her to the universal meaning of babies as a new thing, a new idea, a new direction, a new creative process, anything that was brand new could be represented by a baby. It was a beautiful symbol of the rebirth that's always going to follow. Death is not a bad image in dreamland. It's a great image in dreamland, because if there's a death, the rebirth is right around the corner. And a murder is a choice, a conscious choice to say, we are going to start over. We're going to sacrifice this iteration and wait for the rebirth of the next iteration. Well, that did it for her. She was like, oh my, and I did not know this information that I'm about to share with you. She informed me that she was indeed a writer, that she was working on a project with a television network. She was getting constant notes to have to rewrite, and it really turned out that every time she had to throw away a first draft and start again, she was having this dream, because the scripts were like her babies, and she had to sacrifice them in order to start over again. So there are ways in which the recurring dream is really helping somebody go through a process of shift and change and transformation, and it's the sort of underbelly of the experience that the dream world helps connect us to.
Well, I'm wondering why so many times I have dreams that seem absolutely profound, and within a matter of an hour, they're totally gone. What is that about?
Well, it's because of the thinking mind that we listen, and this is a great conversation to be having in front of an audience of people who are on a spiritual path, because one of the things that is sort of foundational to every spiritual path is the thinking mind that is here telling you who you are is wrong.
That's for sure.
I like to say the mind sees far but is always wrong. You know, our thinking mind is really a navigational tool. It's designed to keep us from bumping into the furniture. And really, that's it. You know, the mind is the part of us that says, it's cold out, wear a sweater. We, of course, do everything with our minds because, in a way, we have to. We must. This is a three-dimensional world that we live in. It is built on time, and time is a construct of the mind and the thinking mind, and this is how we get through life. We express, language comes through the mind, everything that we see is expressed by and interpreted by the mind. Of course, we can't really get away from this. This is what it is. This is the structure of the three-dimensional time-driven experience. When we go to sleep, that part of our experience, that mind-centered observer, shuts down. It goes to sleep. It's gone. It is not present. And we open ourselves to the greater soulful expression of who we are, and we get to experience that in the multidimensional landscape where the dreams occur, and have this wild ride in the greater part of ourselves. Really, the more real part of consciousness is what we tap into in the dream state. Not because we go someplace that we aren't, but because the part of us that tells us we're somewhere else is sleeping. But once we wake up, we have to navigate this place, and that's our navigation tool. And so for the person who never remembers any of their dreams, it's because that snapping into conscious mind observer mentality snaps into place so forcefully and so immediately that the dream world is immediately forgotten. What you're talking about, because I would suspect that because you are a spiritual trekker, you've naturally trained the window of consciousness to remain open longer. But unless that dream is recorded by the conscious observer, by either writing it down or recording it as a recording on a recording digital device, it will slip away. Not because it's gone. It's not gone. You're just simply thinking again with the mental part of you that closes all of that experience off because it's not of itself. The mind doesn't need that. Our souls need it, and that's why we step on a spiritual path, so that we can nourish ourselves with the expansive part of who we are. And we do that by training our mind to quiet down.
How would you differentiate the unconscious mind when we're awake from the form of unconsciousness that you're talking about when we're sleeping? Because it seems to me like they're almost different things.
That's a great question. That I don't know that I've ever been asked that question, and I would actually not differentiate them. I would say they are the same, that it is just the soulful experience that's having its way with us. The differentiation, and this might be a little esoteric, but I know you'll get it. The distinction for me is that our jobs as beings of consciousness is to vibrate at a higher level, and that one way of describing what that even means is, let's call the unconscious mind the soulful part of us, the soul's consciousness that's fully present in dreams. It's our job to loosen the grip that our ego conscious mind has on that part of us so that we are walking more mindfully through three-dimensional time and having a more expansive experience of our soul speaking to us right here, right now, in this three-dimensional world. In order for us to do that, we have to learn things. We have to learn life lessons. We have to process karma. We have to chew up habits and patterns of lack and limitation, not only that we've generated through our lives, but that our seven, you know, generations of ancestors have handed us through DNA. And so if that's the job, if the job is to chew up karmic patterns, the soulful, dreamlike consciousness that is unconscious, that shows up and is present in our conscious moments as the unconscious, does it best by tripping us. It's just the best vehicle that it knows. If it had a consciousness like this, it doesn't. This is the three-dimensional mind consciousness that thinks this way, but I'll use it as an example. Because it can't think like this. All it knows is to be. It's just to be. It says, okay, Michael needs to learn this lesson so he can open up to more of himself. Let's push him down in front of this little moment and have him say something really stupid. such that he hurts somebody's feelings that he cares about deeply by making a tragic mistake in what is about to fall out of his mouth. And we would call that the unconscious in action. The psychotherapist who was sort of psychodynamic and not spiritual would call it repressed feelings emanating out of the unconscious and something that was passive-aggressive being sort of expressed in that moment when you thought you were going to say, pass the salt, but you instead said, why'd you ruin my life?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say they're not different. It's just that in the dreaming world, there's no work being done because there's no barrier to the soul's expression, and the soul just feels expressive. Then we wake up and the work needs to start again because it's like the soul is saying, damn, it's tight in here. I can't express myself at all.
Well, you brought up a couple of things that I want to ask questions about. One of them had to do with karma. And I'm wondering if we can work out karma in our dreams or if we need to do that in our three-dimensional reality, so-called.
Wow, that's a great question. Here's what I suspect is my answer to that question. I think that we work it out in three-dimensional reality, whatever that means, but that our dream life is a tool that's assisting us to do it. So that it might even in that be just as accurate to say that we're actually working stuff out in our dream state, because I believe that this is happening whether you remember your dreams or not. I think that that's the back and forth between waking consciousness and sleeping consciousness is where wisdom grows in terms of karma. There's an interesting study, a sleep dream study out there that says, that's sort of proven to scientists that we learn in REM sleep. And here's how the study went. They put people in the sleep lab onto those ski simulator machines, the kinds that you find in an arcade where you have a screen in front of you that mimics a ski hill and you're standing on bars and So sleepers and participants in the study would be on this machine for a couple of hours before they went to sleep. Then they would go to sleep, and when they were woken up during the night, they would report that they were dreaming of skiing. Not necessarily dreaming of the machine, but they would be dreaming of skiing. The next morning, they'd be put back onto these machines, and their performance increased dramatically.
Wow.
So what we know about that was the mind was learning during the dream state. We were practicing how to ski. Now, of course, what scientists will do in their hubris will say, dreams therefore don't have any soulful meaning. We've just proven that by proving that there's cognitive short-term memory and skill expansion that's happening during the dream state. But that's just the hubris of scientists. What I can take from that very same data is the soul is doing the same thing that we walk through our lives, bumping into our lack, our limitation, our no, our challenges, our anger, our rage, our grief every day. And then we go to sleep and we dream about it and we get better at it. We wake up the next morning having processed and practiced raging, grieving, attacking, receiving. And we wake up the next day better at it. And that's how wisdom expands day to day to day, sleep to sleep to sleep. That's why you grow older and wiser, whether you're paying attention or not. I think there's great value in paying attention, not because you can't get wise without it, because I think that you could sit on the couch eating bonbons in a trailer your entire life and you would still die wiser than you were born. But I do believe that you can increase the amount of wisdom that you can attain in a lifetime by paying attention and sort of participating actively and consciously in that process.
Well, that leads me to ask a question about the benefits of recording dreams and becoming more aware of what's going on in the dream state in terms of developing more wisdom in the conscious state, or relating what themes might be going on in the dreams that could be useful to us in our waking hours.
Well, I do, of course, believe in the value of dreaming, or I don't think I would have devoted my entire life to, you know, sort of inspiring others to do the same. Unfortunately, as a sort of half scientist, half mystic, the science isn't there to prove the idea that paying attention to your dreams in a conscious way has benefits, but I certainly believe that it does. And so it's one tool of many, but I think that it is a tool that takes us directly from conscious mind into unconscious mind. It's a direct connection between what's under the surface and what's above the surface. And what's beautiful about it is that truly to increase the impact of what's happening in this dream state, you don't need to do it right. There's no such thing as doing it right. Like, one of the problems that I think that my very work actually has built into it is I'll do a class or a workshop or even something like this, and someone will hear me interpret a dream, and they'll be like, oh, my God, that was really amazing, and I saw it, I got it. Like, I didn't see it, but the moment he said the baby's a new thing and the da-da-da-da, that's what a dream interpretation needs to look like to be good. And that's not true. The dream, so back to this idea of you wake up smarter no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
That, just let's use that idea to state that the dream state needs no help. It doesn't need your help to help you get wiser. All that really needs to happen is you need to sleep. But being aware of something increases the value that you can get out of it. And
makes
so
sense.
I think that there are hierarchical levels that the more you do, the more value is available to you. So simply remembering the dream as you're, you know, brushing your teeth and having your first cup of coffee lifts up what's available to you by virtue of just letting the dream have a little breathing life in your conscious mind. Writing it down and sort of solidifying it or recording it in these days, you know, digital recording is, you know, probably just as valuable, but sort of, you know, codifying it in some permanent way by writing or recording it does an even greater sort of increase of what's available and valuable to the soul's expression by having it marinate even more. Sharing it with another person elevates the whole thing even greater because we know God through each other. That's how we connect to our own spiritual essence, is through the intimate connections with other people. And so sharing it with somebody else is also brings the whole thing up to yet even a higher level. And then for me, the most sort of powerful thing you can ever do with a dream is to speak back to the unconscious mind in its own language. And that's where creative process comes in. And you don't have to be someone who, you don't have to call yourself an artist to take advantage of this. I'm talking about doing a piece of writing as a result of the dream, writing a poem that's inspired by the dream. My favorite thing to do, and I do this in workshops all the time, is I just put out my colored pencils and some paper and I say, have at it. Draw the dream. And the drawing of the dream doesn't even have to be literal. It doesn't have to be something that would be recognizable. It would be just as valuable to go into the sensation of the dream, grab the colors that you're inspired to grab, and make shapes on the page that evoke the sensation of the dream. Now the unconscious mind is going, ooh, she's paying attention. He's really interested in what's going on. And it will respond to that with more dreaming, more vivid memory of dreams. And I think it will loosen the grip of the unconscious mind's tendency to keep repeating the same message. If the unconscious mind doesn't feel like the dreamer is getting it, it'll just keep throwing up the same. I mean, it's like the knock-knock joke that never ends. You know, knock-knock, who's there, knock-knock. If you don't ever say who's there, you don't get to the next part of the joke. And so responding in some creative way is probably the most powerful dream work you can do. Now, notice that in none of these examples that I just gave, David, is interpreting the dream one of the tools. Ironic that I just wrote a book that's out today that's designed to help you do just that. But in my heart of hearts, it's not necessary to do that. But if that's what you're moved to do, and my book will help you do that, then have at it. Because my thought is the dream just wants to be paid attention to, like that 8-year-old kid at the pool who's going to jump in, and every time he jumps in, he screams at his mother, Ma, watch! You know, the kid's not doing anything terribly interesting, and by the 8th or 9th time, it's like, it's really not interesting, but he still wants Mom to see him. And I think that's our dream. They just want, they have a need, a desire. They thrive. We thrive when we are seen. And our soul thrives when we see it.
Well, why don't we take a couple of calls? We have one person that's been patiently holding since before the show began. So I'm going to go to that individual, and they are calling from area code 916. You are live on the air. What is your name, please?
Hi, my name is Diana.
Hey, Diana.
Hi, Diana. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Well, I don't have internet, that's why on the phone, but I do have something. I started studying dreams when I was like 16, 17. Edgar Cayce was my role model, and I'm 61 now, so I understand what he's saying. I can order dreams. I can ask to have a mountain dream, not 100% of the time. Like, I'm in Florida, and I want to be in the mountains. I can ask to have a mountain dream. I can have the most beautiful mountain dreams when I believe I'm going to get what I ask for. And sometimes in my dream, I wake up, but not, I don't really wake up. But in my dream, I wake up and I'm watching my dream, and I'm commenting on my dream while I'm dreaming in my dream.
Yeah. You're talking, I'm so glad you brought this up. This is called lucid dreaming, and Edgar Cayce really was a proponent of this. And it's a bona fide thing. And it is you tapping into the wildly creative power that we are. The mind is an incredibly powerful place. And what you're doing is you're training your conscious mind to interact with your unconscious mind in a really effective, creative, and powerful way. And you do that by saying, I want to dream of the mountains. And so your ability to call forth a mountain dream is really the same mechanism that's happening when you're in the dream state and you suddenly wake up to the fact that you're dreaming. And you're like, ah, I'm dreaming. Oh, yes. Okay. I'm in bed. I even know where I am. But this is a dream. And that's it's a rich experience. And I think one of the values of that experience is when we translate that idea into our lives, where we're not talking about dreaming, but we're talking about our pedestrian lives, moving through life. We are that powerful and creative. We can call upon anything. The only thing that limits us is our belief that something's not possible. And so when you express this thing that you're absolutely capable of doing, the sort of pushback on you would be, don't forget that you can do the same thing with your waking life. Now, that doesn't mean you could win the lottery, because there might be just too many, you know, no ideas about winning the lottery. Plus, it's not exactly the highest calling to go after the lottery. But you could say, as mountains are in symbolic language, they are the higher realms of consciousness. They are ascension consciousness because they are higher up. And you could say the same thing about your day-to-day life, that it's a Friday, and you could say, today, I want to visit joy. I want joy today. And it'll come.
That's a good idea.
Well, you have at it, honey. Go practice
well,
thank
that. You. Thank
go
you.
Go practice
that.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I'm awake. Wow. That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Did you have any other comments or questions, Diana?
No, that's all right now.
Great. Thank you, Diana.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
Enjoy the rest of the show. Well, now what Diana was talking about and your response to her brought up a couple of questions for me. And certainly, I am a strong believer in how we shape our own reality through the power of our positive thinking, through the power of the vibrational state that we live in. And I'm wondering, in Diana's instance, where she called forth this vision of the mountains, disregarding the symbolic content that you talked about, if she can do that in her unconscious state and be lucid in doing that, what's the difference between that and somebody that says they can astrally project?
Okay. Well, I would say what I feel you speaking into is something that's about intention, that's a specific intention, that the structure of astrally projecting is a particular sensation. I want to have the sensation of being outside of my physical body, but still having an awareness of my physical body as something that's over there. So I want to feel the sensation of still being me, but free of the limits of my physical body. That's a very specific request.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a name that sort of codifies what that is, and we call it astral projecting. But really, it's just a specific request. I want to feel this sensation, the sensation of being out of my physical body, but still aware of my physical body. And so what happened with the call and with Diana was, I made a kind of loose interpretation of her dream that she was sharing with us, the mountains, as higher and ascended. And then I used the idea of calling forth joy. I want to feel joy on this day.
Yeah.
So for me, the distinction isn't that one is one thing and the other is another. It's that they're both the idea of vibrationally creating something. It's just that one is creating this particular sensation and experience, and one is creating that particular sensation and experience. And it's true that if the experience you want to create is astral projection, you better be sitting down or lying down, because it ain't going to happen if you're not. And if it does happen, you could be in trouble.
I can well imagine.
To create it is the same.
Well, let's talk along a spiritual track for just a minute before we go to the other caller. And I'm intrigued when you talk about specificity, because I think that, or I believe, and it's been my experience, that it is so important to be specific in the requests that I put out to the universe, to ask for something specific or something better. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
I think that you're right about that specificity is important, but I do think it's a sticky wicket, because there's a difference between a vision and a fantasy, and that when we get specific, we are more likely to fall prey to our fantasy and therefore get nowhere. So as an example, for the person who wants to maybe make a living doing something more satisfying and creative, if the specific thing that they start vibrating with is that other career, that other job, but it's ultimately a fantasy or a pipe dream, and it's never going to come their way because there's incongruity between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. It's kind of also
right.
like if the specificity is around, say, a particular kind of abundance, and if the form of abundance is prosperity, and that form of that prosperity is money, and you say to yourself, I feel rich, I am creating wealth, but under the surface, you have a belief system that says, I don't deserve it. It ain't ever going to come because there's
right.
an incongruity between the one voice and the much louder unconscious voice. So one of the things that you do instinctively that's helpful is or better. You're not attaching yourself to the form, that it's this or better. That's one way of subjugating falling prey to the fantasy piece of it. And another thing that I sort of help people understand or work with is this idea that if there might be below the surface some negative consciousness or undeserving consciousness, there are two words that are crucial to your vibrational, affirmational process that you want to make sure you're working with, and that's willing and in the process of. So you could be like, I feel rich, but under the surface you're going, no, you don't. What? Who's he kidding? But I can say, I am willing to feel rich. Then the unconscious mind sort of perks up and goes, what? That's new information. Because it doesn't fly in the face of the negative structure that the unconscious mind might be holding. And suddenly there's a willingness there, and the unconscious mind has to loosen up and say, what? I don't understand this willingness thing. What is that? That could be dangerous. To our tight-fisted structure. Or in the process,
well,
I am in the process of attracting a new career.
Well, thank you for that clarification. I think that's a very important distinction. Let's go to the other caller. I'm going to area code 586. You are live on the air. What is your name, please? I am with 586, and I'm going to identify the first three digits of your phone number. And if you'd like to speak with Dr. Lennox, feel free to. It is phone number 709. Can you hear me? Okay.
I'm guessing.
Apparently. Or else perhaps they're letting the dog out. I don't know. But at any rate, we always appreciate callers. They add a lot of richness to the show. Let's talk a little bit about creation. We've talked about the unconscious mind's ability to create, and I'm wondering what we can do at a conscious level to create, and talk a little bit more about that, because you seem to really be on a similar wavelength
yeah.
with me.
Well, I think that if being creative, whether that looks like creative expression as a sort of a form of expressiveness or art, or just creating your life as a conscious co-creation with energy and vibration and spirit, as you've alluded to a couple of times, where dreaming and the dream process can be helpful is that because they are so proficient at allowing us to drop below the surface, bear the various challenges or the demons of negativity have their full voice. We can ask our dreams to help us have a more vibrant and creative experience during our waking life. So much as our caller earlier, Diana, said, I petition dreams of the mountains. You can be more general than that and say, hey, dreams, I'm having a struggle with XYZ. Help me in the dreamland by throwing up some images that I can work with. I did this recently, and I was presented with two different dreams over two different nights. It's so interesting that I even mentioned my car to you in my personal story, because the dream's about the old car. In my old life, my last car was a BMW Z3 Roadster. It was an expensive sports car that I drove around Los Angeles as that guy, you know, that jerk guy who would cut you off and drive away because I had the fast car that could do it. And this was the sort of one of the ways I expressed myself in my, you know, early 30s. And that consciousness is long gone. But it has a connection to an idea of what success looks like that today doesn't vibrate with me anymore. Today, success looks about how I feel, how I'm being of service, and gently, slowly growing my business as a spiritual teacher, little by little, year by year. So when I asked for some help and assistance, my unconscious mind gave me two dreams, one in which I was driving the BMW once again, only it was out of gas, and the next night I came upon the BMW parked on a street where it had been attacked and stripped of all of its accoutrement, and the chairs were gone, and the doors were taken, and all the parts were stripped of it. And so I got to say, oh, I see. As I'm moving to the next level of my life as a making a living as a spiritual teacher, I still have to let go of a consciousness that I think is 10 years gone, 15 years gone, but it's still there. There's still in the lower depths of my unconscious mind is a desire for it to be flashy. For it to be, you know, it's like I would equate the BMW is like, well, I want to be on Oprah. And who knows? Maybe one day I'll be having this conversation with Oprah, but if I covet that, I get nowhere.
Right.
If I keep doing my work bit by bit, little by little, then I build the organic business of my heart's desire, and it'll lead me where it leads me. That is not the consciousness of BMW Z3 Roadster. That consciousness is I drive straight to Oprah's place. But my dream tells me, no, Michael, it's not about that anymore. You know this. Let that car run out of gas. Let that car be freed up of its operating ability because it no longer serves you to have those thoughts and consciousnesses. Now, if you had asked me the week or two before that dream petitioning, I would have told you, if you had said to me, Michael, you're still attached to a slick version of success, I would have said to you, you're mistaken. I'm above that. I have moved past that. But the dream petitioning said to me, no, there's still more to be done. Now, that's not a bad news thing. There's nothing for me to worry about. It's not like I'm behind the eight ball. It's just another moment of humility where I get to remind myself I'm still a human being that still has secret desires and covets success at a certain level. Well, let's just let that go because it doesn't serve me to live in that. It's back to your question about you know, fantasy versus vision. My vision
And I'm wondering, one more question connected to fantasy. What is the difference between a daydream and a night dream?
Well, I think
and how can
the
daydream serve us?
You know, the night dream comes directly from your soul, and the daydream comes directly from a combination of your soul with your fantasy. I think daydreams are very dangerous. I tell people to, if they like to daydream, and I've had arguments with people about this, I think fantasy and daydreaming is unhelpful.
I agree.
Unless you're sitting in a chair and using the vision to cultivate a vibrational experience of creating it, but that's not a daydream.
Gotcha.
The daydream is just an escape from the mundane, you know, sort of pain of the suffering of living by creating a fantasy that gets you into escape mode, and I don't think anybody benefits.
It's just another form of attachment to something outside of yourself.
It's outside of yourself that doesn't exist. Exactly right, David.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you'd like to say in closing? The hour's gone very quickly, and I thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Go buy my book. That's what I have to say. Llewellyn's Dictionary, A Complete Dictionary of Dreams. You can find it on Amazon and everywhere books are sold. And if you do buy it on Amazon, go back to Amazon after you've read it. And if you liked it, review it.
And if people want to get in touch with you, is your website the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. MichaelLennox.com or on Facebook at Michael Lennox or the site on Facebook, Perchance to Dream.
And just to let the listeners know, Lennox is spelled with two N's.
Correct.
So thank you, Dr. Michael Lennox. It's been a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So now we come to a close. Let's pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.